On this Saturday night, Trail of Terror, a suspect now identified and charged in this week's deadly attacks in Belgium. Is he the man in the hat seen in the airport just before the attack? As an American survivor recalls what it was like as his world was shattered. Custody controversy, a young girl removed from the foster parents who raised her for 4 of 6 years because she is 1/64th Native American. The wrong man. He served 20 years for a murder he says he did not commit. Tonight, Richard Rosario is a free man after witnesses and our investigation raised new doubts. And gentle giants once near extinction, the remarkable recovery of the manatees, and the new battle over whether they should still be called endangered. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News. Reporting tonight, Thomas Roberts.
Good evening. Fast-moving developments in the investigation of the Brussels terror attacks. NBC News confirming the identity of one of the Americans killed as Justin Schultz. His wife, Stephanie, is still listed as missing. And today, Belgian authorities charged 3 suspects in custody with terrorism. NBC News confirming the identity of one of the suspects as Faisal Shafal. He was arrested Thursday night outside the prosecutor's office. He is the first person charged in direct connection to the Brussels attacks. But is he the notorious man in the hat, seen in the grainy image from the airport with 2 of the alleged suicide bombers who died in that attack? We have a series of reports tonight. Bill Neely starts us off.
After Belgium's worst atrocity, charges today against a man alleged to have had a core role in the attacks. Faisal Shefu, whose apartment was raided 2 days ago, was charged with terrorist murder and a direct link to the Brussels bombs. Also charged, 2 men identified only as Rabba N, arrested near Brussels over a new foiled plot in France, and Aboubakar A, also picked up near Brussels and charged with unspecified terrorist activities. Faisal Shefu lived close to the bombed metro station. He was charged with terrorism today by federal prosecutors after being arrested in a car right here, right outside the federal prosecutor's office, the very center of the investigation. Investigators haven't said what role they believe Shefu played in the attacks, but Belgian media suggest he's this man, pictured walking through the airport with the 2 men who detonated their explosives. NBC News has not confirmed that report. And tonight, news that Justin Schultz from Tennessee, who'd been missing since the airport bombings, has been confirmed dead by his family. His wife, Stephanie, is still unaccounted for. An FBI team is now helping the investigation, the president pledging more.
Belgium's a close friend and ally of the United States. And when it comes to our friends, America has their back.
The airport scene of the first bombings is still closed and guarded. The forensic examination here at the airport is over. The problem now is how to improve security to prevent another atrocity. An atrocity that so many, like Abdullah, are struggling to recover from. The airport worker's leg has been amputated. He's burned and, like so many, scarred from the ISIS massacres.
Well, a demonstration that was planned here for tomorrow, they called it a march against fear, has been cancelled because of security fears and because police don't have enough free officers to protect it. Thomas?
Bill Neely in Brussels tonight. Bill, thank you very much. More relatives have arrived in Belgium to comfort the Americans who were seriously injured in the attacks. And now we're learning more about a group of Mormon missionaries from Utah who survived the attacks. Gabe Gutierrez has their stories for us tonight.
When the airport exploded, across the world, a mother and father watched in horror.
You're watching things and seeing things and imagining what he went through.
Amber Impey and her husband, Court, have just arrived in Brussels to comfort their 20-year-old son, Joe, one of at least 14 Americans injured in the terrorist attacks.
My heart was broken for everyone involved. It just made me grateful that he was still alive.
Burns, shrapnel, the young Mormon missionary, is heavily bandaged, but alive.
How are you feeling?
I'm doing awesome. I'm feeling good.
He was dropping off another missionary at the airport and was at the back of the check-in line when the blast knocked him unconscious.
I just remember I opened my eyes and I saw lots of people laying around the floors. It was pretty tragic. It was really scary. And I just remember the thoughts coming to me that, whoa, this is really happening. This is really a bomb.
Today, doctors started bringing another one of the missionaries with him, Richard Norby, out of a medically induced coma, his wife and son by his side.
Would you say he's a tough guy?
Yeah, incredibly nice. Yeah, and soft. He's a fantastic teacher. He loves people.
Pam Normie almost made the trip to the airport with her husband, but stayed home because there wasn't enough room in the car. Despite his severe injuries, he somehow managed to call her.
And I could tell by his voice when I first said hi, you know, and he said, Pam, that something was wrong.
It was the phone call she'll never forget. But tonight she is grateful, hoping he'll wake up by Easter. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Brussels.
This week's attacks have heightened concerns about Europeans and others who become radicalized by ISIS in Syria and then return with deadly intentions. U.S. officials say that over the past few years, more than 20,000 foreign fighters have poured into Syria, and at least 3,400 of them from Western countries like Belgium. As Keir Simmons reports, some never make it back.
Olivier holds up a picture of his son.
So that was my son, Sean.
He's a good-looking young man.
He's a really good boy, you know.
He was 24 years old.
He used to break dance on the street and listen to music.
3 years ago, Olivier Van Bett's son, Sean, was recruited to go to Syria to help, Sean said, to fight against the Syrian government.
They promised them a future there, and they say to them, you can be a hero, you can change the world.
He didn't make it home.
So my son died in a few months after.
And Syria itself was dying. In the civil war there, ISIS was born, recruiting more Westerners in poor neighborhoods like Molenbeek, Brussels. Those who join consider it like family, this young man from Molenbeek told me, too terrified to be identified. For them, it's the only family they have. Others who joined had criminal records, like the men who blew themselves up at Brussels airport. Europe's intelligence agencies now fear hundreds have returned to their European neighborhoods to die launching attacks like Brussels and Paris. Young people here have been brainwashed, this youth worker says. ISIS recruiting the lost and disillusioned.
It's easy to come and to say, you see, you are not welcome here. Come with us. Come with us. We will give you a future. We will give you a real value in our Islamic State.
Then sending them home with deadly intentions. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Brussels.
Back here at home in politics, Donald Trump was on defense on several fronts today, including his continuing personal feud with Ted Cruz. The question, is Trump jeopardizing potential votes among women? Hallie Jackson has more tonight.
Donald Trump insisting he's not isolationist when it comes to foreign policy, but instead that it's America first, in an extensive interview with the New York Times, explaining he's unpredictable on purpose, getting into international issues today after a week that saw the race getting personal. Trump denying he had anything to do with the National Enquirer's story accusing Ted Cruz of extramarital affairs, a report Cruz forcefully denies.
It is a tabloid smear. And it is a smear that has come from Donald Trump and his henchmen.
Trump also under fire for sharing this unflattering photo of Ted Cruz's wife side by side with his own, a retweet that's reignited controversy over Trump's attitude toward women. The candidate now no longer encouraged to call into several network Sunday shows, taking to Twitter, venting, "The media is so after me on women." New polling shows Trump trails Hillary Clinton with female voters by 20 points, twice the gender gap of the 2012 race, even as Clinton has struggled to connect with suburban female voters.
I think for upscale suburban women, Donald Trump is simply too crude for them to support, and I'm sure the Democrats are going to use that against him.
Clinton already is, as Bernie Sanders argues he's the one who could take down Trump.
Don't let anybody tell you that Hillary Clinton is the strongest Democratic candidate to take on the Republicans.
Sanders and a crowd of 15,000, captivated not just by his words, but by a bird.
And on this primary night, Sanders getting some good news from some caucuses across the country. NBC News projecting him the decisive winner in Alaska, also projecting him the winner in Washington as well. Sanders now hoping for a sweep with a victory in Hawaii. Thomas?
Our Hallie Jackson in Washington. Hallie, thank you. She is 6 years old and for the past 4 years had lived with a foster family in California. That is until early this week when she was taken away from her family, all because of her Native American heritage. Now, as our Steve Patterson reports, her foster parents are fighting to get her back.
The moment is tough to watch. A young girl sobbing, her foster parents pleading.
It's gut-wrenching.
Summer and Rusty Page knew that day might come when they brought Lexi into their lives 4 years ago.
Food isn't worth eating. Sleep is overrated, and it's all about what can we do to get Lexi home.
Their foster daughter is just 1/64th Choctaw Native American. Because of her heritage, her case falls under the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, a federal law enacted in the 70s, created to promote tribal security by keeping Native American children with their ancestry. Members of the Choctaw Nation have been advocating for Lexi to live with her extended family in Utah since 2011, and say these relatives have visited and called her during that time. The Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma said, "We appreciate the concern for Lexi and want to assure everyone she is in a safe, loving home with her relatives and her biological sisters." Author David Troyer has written about his experience as a Native American.
The law was passed to protect kids like Lexi and to make sure that they have robust connections with their tribal communities.
But the Page family continues to fight.
I love you, Lexi. And I'm proud to be your mommy. You're a sweet girl.
Bring Lexi home, a plea they say they will never stop making. Steve Patterson, NBC News, Santa Clarita, California.
A New York man was freed this week after spending 20 years in prison for a crime he says he did not commit. Dateline NBC has been following Richard Rosario's case for a newly released digital documentary series. It's called Conviction, and Kristen Dahlgren has more tonight.
With applause and smiles, Richard Rosario enjoyed his first moments of freedom, holding the hand of the wife who stood by him and hugging the children he left behind as babies.
20 years of my life, I've never seen my father outside of prison.
Convicted of the 1996 Bronx murder of a 17-year-old named George Colazzo, Rosario spent half his life in prison.
I still don't understand what I'm doing in prison. I'm innocent.
Dateline NBC producer Dan Slepian first met Rosario 2 years ago and has been investigating his story for a new web series, Conviction.
What we're doing here is we're on our own journey. Is he telling the truth?
From the beginning, Rosario claimed he was in Florida at the time the murder was committed in New York, with 13 alibi witnesses to prove it, including his friend John Torres, now a sheriff's deputy. Torres testified at Rosario's 1998 trial.
I'm looking at him, talking to him, June 19th, June 20th. It is 1,000% impossible for Richard to have committed that crime.
But Rosario's court-appointed attorneys reached out to only a few of the 13 alibi witnesses. As for police, they never spoke to any of them back then, according to Rosario's current lawyers. A jury convicted Rosario after two eyewitnesses at the crime scene identified him from a police mugshot book. Dateline talked to one of those eyewitnesses, Robert Davis, who began to question his recollection.
If I did lock up an innocent person, that's kind of bad.
Finally, after years of unsuccessful appeals and petitions, the new Bronx District Attorney, Darcell Clark, agreed to take another look and sent investigators to interview the alibi witnesses.
I need a chance to investigate it more. But in the meantime, there's no reason for him to have to wait behind bars.
And so with that...
My family didn't deserve this. I didn't deserve this. Nor the victim's family or the victim.
Rosario's conviction was vacated. Not yet exonerated, he'll be back in court in June to find out if the DA will retry him. But for now, and for the first time in 20 years, he has hope and he's home. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, New York.
And you can watch the entire 11-part Dateline conviction series on NBCNews.com. We are back with a success story, but also a cautionary tale. Once near extinction, manatees numbered just a few hundred. Last year, biologists counted more than 6,000 of the marine mammals in Florida. With such a rebound, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plans to take them off the endangered list. But as Carrie Sanders reports, not everyone thinks that's a good idea.
This is like mommy and daddy and a baby.
One of the Endangered Species Act's most amazing success stories. The population of these gentle giants has exploded. So some are now asking, why are manatees still listed as endangered?
They don't meet the requirements to remain on the endangered status.
Save Crystal River in Florida sued the federal government.
No one is against manatees.
To force a downlisting from endangered to threatened. President Lisa Moore says the shift would free up federal money for other causes.
I think it's about what the law and the science says. The law gives certain conditions under which they are supposed to move them, and that's what the Federal Fish and Wildlife has to go by.
With the downlisting, state and other protections would remain in place.
Endangered is when a species is likely to go extinct.
But some, like Pat Rose of Save the Manatees, fear people might ignore them.
So when you look out here and you see a baby with its mother, it would seem to me that you might say, hey, it's working. We're seeing the population grow.
Yes, and we're seeing, if you look at the mother, look how many times she's been hit by different boats.
Surviving manatees bear the scars from boat propellers. Just last year, speedboats killed 86 manatees.
Be as calm, as quiet as possible.
Captain John Spann, who guides tourists to swim with manatees, $199 million tourism industry, says those collisions are often sport fishermen racing to a fishing hole.
Some of these fishermen think of them as speed bumps, just things that are in their way when they're going from side A to side B.
Speed bumps.
Mm-hmm.
The other threats include red tide and unusually cold weather that can kill hundreds at a time.
We need to keep manatees on the endangered list because their threats and risks are so great that we can lose nearly 1,000 in one given year alone.
Some worry that even 6,000 manatees isn't enough and that they could be extinct before the federal government got around to relisting them as endangered. Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Crystal River, Florida.
The cherry blossoms are in all their glory this weekend in Washington. The National Cherry Blossom Festival kicking off today. The event drawing about 1.5 million people each year. Beautiful. When we come back, the Nazis forced her into hiding, but couldn't take away her art or her hope. Finally tonight, it's hard to imagine having a creative spark when you fear for your life. Yet in Nazi-occupied Europe during World War II, hundreds of artists painted and sketched, often hiding their work or being killed because of it. Now, some of this art is on display in Berlin for the first time, giving us a glimpse into the world these artists saw or envisioned. Kelly Kobiega met with the only known artist still alive.
For Nellie Toll, art has always been a window to another world.
These were all the pictures here.
You painted these while you were in hiding?
Yeah.
She was six when the Nazis invaded her hometown in Poland in 1941. Nellie and her mother hid in a Catholic family's apartment, one room with one window, for more than a year.
I would see, you know, the whole world out there.
But you couldn't go?
No, I couldn't dare to go.
So instead you painted?
I painted a better world.
Friends in a field, vacation in the country, joy and freedom.
I completely forgot what I was. I was just focused on that.
On your own world.
On my own world.
A world now on display at Berlin's National Gallery. 100 paintings, drawings, and sketches by Nellie Toll and 52 other artists showing life in the Jewish ghettos and Nazi death camps. Brutality, but also strength.
The portraits are portraits of beautiful people, of proud people, not of victims, of destroyed people.
With each one of these works, there's so much more than what you see inside the frame. This one wasn't painted on canvas, but on a potato sack with homemade paint. Supplies were scarce, and simply creating art could get them killed. But for the artists, it was worth the risk.
It was their hope that if they would not survive, at least something of them would survive through their art.
And it did. Their voices coming through in ink and acrylic over six decades later.
And when I paint, I'm mostly interested.
At 81, Nellie Toll is the only artist still alive, living in New Jersey with her husband. Last month, she went to Germany, a place she never thought she'd visit, embracing a modern German leader and posing with her paintings, proud that the product of her darkest days now sheds light for a new generation. Kelly Kobiella, NBC News, Berlin.
That's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. I'm Thomas Roberts reporting from New York. Thank you for watching and good night.